Everybody, welcome to Drive Through HR. Brian, William, and Nisha coming to you live every day talking with the people that love human resources, HR. We're going to get to our guest quickly because amazing things always come out of this conversation, and it goes really quick. So, Naomi Bloom, welcome back to Drive Through HR.
Thank you very much for having me.
If you would, because I know there's at least 1.7 people that don't know who you are, if you could introduce yourself to our lovely family of listeners, we'll kick it off from there.
Well, the easiest way to introduce myself is to say that other than Dave Duffield, I'm the oldest living, still fairly competent HR technology person.
Is he really? He's older than he. I always perceived that he was, like 52. Does he? Because you know, he has a bit like he doesn't age.
He doesn't age. Like my husband Ron Wallace, and the two of them are quite good friends. It's like looking at pictures of Dorian Gray.
Yeah.
But the truth of the matter is that Dave is a few years older than I am, and I will always be the younger.
Nice. Well, I like that. You know, he has kind of a Casey Kasem approach to aging that, you
absolutely
know, just goes on forever. Now, I mean, do us a favor. I mean, obviously, we talk fairly frequently. What's top of mind for you these days? What's going on in your world? What are you thinking a lot about these days?
Well, I've actually been thinking a lot about something that, given that I have no children, I probably shouldn't even worry about. But it's something I do care about deeply, and that is, you know, I've been in the forefront of automating the hell out of everything to do with human resource management and done it very enthusiastically over my whole career. I'd like to think that we've done some good work in the process, but we've also decimated an awful lot of work that used to be done by HR people. And looking at the future of HR technology, we're going to be doing away with a lot more of the work that has historically been done by HR professionals, doing away with a lot of jobs. But if I look at that more broadly, what I've been doing is going on all over every field you can imagine. And I look out into the future, and I see a world with, on the one hand, a lot of exciting work to be done by people with the right skills to do that work, a certain amount of, you know, drudgery work to be done with people at the very lowest skill level, but an awful lot of what went on in the middle, that the kind of work that created our middle class, I just see that work being, you know, disappeared. And so I thought if I could, I'd like to just tell a few little anecdotes just to give a flavor of what I'm talking about.
That would be awesome.
And let me just start with the garbage collection story. So I'm not talking here about garbage compaction in a computer science sense, but the actual garbage that we all create. Because when I was a kid, you had whatever garbage can you wanted. The garbage truck came around with a driver and two people on the back. They picked up whatever sort of garbage a container you had. They emptied it, and they went on their way. Then about 20 years ago, all over the country, all over the U.S. at least, you began to be required to have a certain kind of garbage container, a certain kind of recycling container. And at that point, the trucks had a driver and one person on the back. Well, more recently, the trucks have been redesigned, and so have the containers. These trucks don't have somebody on the back anymore. They have this arm that comes out, grabs the container, dumps it into the truck, and all of this is being handled by the driver. Now, along come driverless vehicles, which I'm sure you know are in the early stages, but coming right along, and soon we're going to have garbage pickup that doesn't require any people. So in the course of my work life, a fairly routine kind of work is still going on, but there aren't going to be any people involved. And while that may not seem like a big deal, those were real jobs with real benefits, full-time work for people with, you know, modest skills. sort of a rung on the ladder, if you will. That's an example from the sort of physical labor, not white-collar world. Let me give you another example from our world, robotic surgery. Just in recent years, many types of surgery that used to require a surgeon actually physically touching the patient and doing the cutting is now being done by robotic cutting. And there is a surgeon who is working at the workstation with the robot. Well, little by little, what that is doing is reducing the number of players that have to be physically present in the surgical theater. That's a good thing, because maybe there will be some reduction in overall healthcare costs as fewer of these folks are needed in the surgical theater. But I can tell you that there is a generation of particularly orthopedic surgeons and others whose work is now being addressed with robotics who are going to be retiring early because they can't retrain. They are so set in the way that they do things that this is a really different set of skills. Just one more quick story that's uppermost in everybody's mind. A lot of our callers travel personally or on business, and we often take taxis. And we all have horror stories about bad drivers and dirty taxis and, you know, being charged too much, a million stories. Now, of course, all the taxis are computer, not all of them, but many of them, are computer allocated. They're driving with GPS and so on, and we know that most often they're foreign-born, that driving a taxi is one of the first jobs in any major city that becomes available to a new immigrant. What about driverless? You get into a small vehicle, it's perfectly clean because there hasn't been any taxi driver living in it, it takes you where you want to go. It knows how to get there, and you're off and running. So we have the means today to eliminate all manner of work. Granted, in the process, we are creating work. We are creating vast amounts of work for computer scientists, for all of the people that work around technology. But I don't think there's going to be enough jobs thus created to make up for all the jobs we are losing. And without the income from the jobs we are losing, we're not going to have a middle class. And that worries me quite a bit. Now, if I were an HR person, I'd be practically hysterical, because they know that over the last 20 years, even more so over the length of my career, the numbers of HR people per employee count, so that ratio, has been substantially impacted by information technology. And as the number of workers go down, it gets impacted even more. So, you know, I've made the statement, SHRM brags about their hundreds of thousands of members. There may only be 10,000 such potential members in 10 years. And so I think the world for the HR professional is having an immediate, there's an immediate impact for them. And the ones that are going to be successful in the future, obviously, and there will be very successful HR professionals, are going to be the ones that have the right skills to cope in this very different world.
Yeah, real quickly, Naomi, in the years that you've been tracking HR and really working with technology companies to eradicate a lot of the inefficiencies that go on in work, if you will. And so you've seen the transition of personnel to HR, HR to human capital, and you've seen so many different things. Tell us kind of some of the things that you've seen, like, you know, when we first started, we had personnel departments and we had time clocks and we had all of this paper, and we automated a lot of this paper into these databases. We've seen some of this before, and I think the hope for a lot of people probably listening to the call is that a lot of the tactical elements of HR are eradicated by technology and efficiencies and database efficiencies, if you will. But there's still an element of strategy, if you will, that still can be and should be driven by real people. So if you don't mind, give us your take on that.
Yeah, no, look, I totally agree that there's certain elements of human resource management, not just strategy development, but the extremely hands-on consultation that great HR people do with their business partners that help them decide where to locate work, how to decide what work to do versus what work to contract, how to design and develop the right kinds of recruitment, compensation, development, et cetera, plan. So there will always be work for the best and brightest of HR strategic thinkers and consultative personalities. That's not a problem. The problem is everybody else. And the everybody else's have tended to dominate in the ranks for sheer number. And to some extent, still do. But I think that, you know, not everybody has it in them to be a brilliant human resource management strategist or consultant. And because long ago the consulting firms were able to offer very attractive career paths and compensation, a lot of those folks are concentrated in firms that do this for a living, rather than in firms that do something else for a living but still need a dose of that kind of strategic capability. And you really see this below the largest companies. If the largest companies, you still have some of those people on board. But if you go into a middle market firm that has a small HR staff, they can't afford the full-time services of the kinds of highly skilled people we're talking about. They often have to turn to third parties. I think in the final analysis, though, we are now capable of doing more and more of what I would have thought previously was more strategic HR. We can now automate a fair amount of that. I'll give you a good example. I've been working on a project where you want to design a comp plan. That is, a line manager wants to design an incentive plan of some kind. Typically, they'd go to either, if they had one, an HR plan design person in their own organization, or they'd go to a comp plan expert in one of these consultancies. But if you know how TurboTax works, imagine a TurboTax-like software program that leads that middle manager in an interrogatory way through a series of questions and answers about their company, about their business, about their industry, about how well they're doing or not well they're doing, about how they're organized their sales function or not organized it, and little by little brings them down to a plan design. And we know it's doable because we have software that can diagnose diseases. It's a question of embedding the intelligence of the very best comp plan designers into that kind of software. That's not available today, but it will be available.
Nice.
And so, you know, my own view is there's a huge delta between the best of what we can do and the average of what's going on. We know the average of what's going on out there is still a lot of administrative HR work being done by hand, a lot of manual work, a lot of papers still moving around. I mean, we've got a lot of stuff that should long since have been fixed.
Right.
But if I look at the best of what's possible, it paints a different picture.
Let me ask you kind of a personal question, if you will. I study generation stuff, so as a hobby, I do a lot of work on Ancestry.com and just kind of study generations. And as one gets older, there's a lot of different paths that people take as they age. So content coming from you at this particular juncture, I wonder to myself, the sky is falling, all jobs are going away, you know, HR is going to shrink to a body of one. I kind of put that in the sky is falling bucket, whereas probably a lot of it is true, of course, because you're smart and you study this stuff. But I'm not sure other people would peer through that veneer to then see that there's the substance is there. They just throw it into the sky is falling, and yeah, she's at a point in her age where the sky is falling, and that kind of makes sense. Did you grow up when, like, your mother and your father and your uncle and your, you know, your grandparents and people like that, as they aged, like, have you always had, I call it an anxiety, and it's obviously not an anxiety, but it's an awareness to kind of meta issues and macro issues. Have you always had that, or is this something that you've seen, you know, that's developed in you over the last 10 years or 5 years or whatever?
I think because I started out to be a physicist, I always have had a sort of a big picture mindset. And it gets me into trouble because I look at the possibilities of what might be and what could be and what really should be. And then at the reality of what is, and I want to work very hard and rally the troops to achieve the possibilities and not be unduly mired in the reality, you know, in where we are today. I see the mountain. I want to take it.
Real quickly, Naomi, are you always frustrated? I mean,
the good news is that I'm capable of holding two opposing thoughts in my brain at the same time without going nuts.
Okay, all right.
I can handle the cognitive dissonance of being an absolute optimist, of waking up every morning and seeing all the good possibilities of life, and at the same time knowing that the sky really is falling.
Mm-hmm.
And not being unduly paralyzed by that.
Yeah, that's abnormal.
It is abnormal. I agree. Let's hear it for the abnormals. But I think there is a very important point in all of this, which is, on the one hand, we do need to be cognizant that the future is not going to be the same as today, any more than today is the same as the past. And in order to live a long and productive work life, let alone physical life, we have to be adaptable. We have to understand that change is inevitable. We need to learn how to change. We need to build skills that enable us to seize opportunities. We need to recognize that if we allow ourselves to become complacent and get in the rut that says, my rut is my rut, and my rut's never going to change, and I've been successful in my rut, so of course I'll continue being successful until, you know, you wake up one morning and they've dug up your rut. So, I mean, I do think that there's value in being aware of the bigger picture, being cognizant of it, but not to the point of paralysis, just to the point of motivation.
Sure. And that, you know, and that absolutely makes sense. I'm glad you're maybe one of the two people on the face of the planet that's able to do that so consistently. So bravo to that. Naomi, let me do a quick reset. Everybody, you're listening to Drive Through HR, Brian and William, on with the wonderful Naomi Bloom. So, Naomi, I want to get your thoughts. Today's the day Twitter goes public. IPO
oh, wow.
time. Performing like a champ. For some people, they're starting to do a little bit of a sell-off, cash in some of that money. What are your thoughts on that? SaaS, social, IPO, a lot of money, $25 billion valuation or market cap at the moment. What are your thoughts?
Well, one thought is that if I were Twitter, the nice people at Twitter were to ask my opinion, I would say to them, you want to make a few bucks quickly? That is beyond what you just made. There's a lot of recruiting going on Twitter, a lot of sourcing going on Twitter. And what they need to do is protect the hashtag job and create a premium service for employers who want to use that hashtag job and charge them a pittance to use it every time they use it. So they can be profitable tomorrow. The other thing I would say is that personally, I think Twitter is phenomenal. Phenomenal. And if I could have bought stock, I would have bought stock. And that's because it has not lost itself in 953, you know, alternative add-ons like LinkedIn has done, like Facebook has done. It has stayed very true to its original intent as a mini blogging tool, a way to reach out, whether it's to arrange lunch at a restaurant with friends, or and those friends, by the way, could be around the world. You know, I'm going to be in Istanbul next Tuesday, for an example. On my last trip to Istanbul, I blurted that out, and, you know, people showed up. So it has this amazing ability for political organizing, for having uprisings in Iran, for wishing happy birthday to people that really deserve to hear it from everybody. I mean, it's just this amazing, amazing invention. And I wish them well. I'm delighted they've made a bunch of money.
Well, and to stay with that, actually to stay with that theme, where do you see the skills gap from HR as it relates to both probably technology and the social technology?
Well, there's been an awful lot of, and I'm probably going to offend a third of your audience, but there's been an awful lot of jumped up, I'm a social media expert people running around the countryside lecturing to HR people that they should do social tech. And I don't think the fact that you're on, you know, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, Pinterest, and two or three others makes you a guru. I think what makes you a guru is being able to demonstrate the use cases for these various tools where the benefit, the net result of using the tool far outweighs the cost, and I don't mean money out of your pocket necessarily, but certainly time is money. I so wish HR people would be really tech savvy, because then they would see that social tech is just another flavor, a powerful flavor, but it needs to be use case based. I am very clear in my own mind what I do on Facebook, what I do on LinkedIn, what I do on Twitter, and what I don't. I'm very clear when I look at, you know, five new social tech things that I hear about or that have emerged, very clear about how I decide, is it worth it to take on something else? And that comes from being tech savvy. Otherwise, you can't evaluate these things any more than you can evaluate talent management suites. By the way, my voice sounds today like a dying frog, and that's because I was in an all-day meeting yesterday, and I overused it.
You sound great. Naomi, we've got about 6 minutes left in the show, and we need to ask you about 2014. It's been on Brian and I's mind. What do you have as you look out at 2014? You and Ron are going to be doing some things that are different. You're taking on some different initiatives. You're going to be doing some different things. Take us into that world. What's 2014 look like for you?
Well, I am going from being an ecumenical consultant, that is, one who worked with multiple competing vendors at the same time, one who didn't place bets, didn't have favorites, one who was trying really to engage broadly across the industry, to being a very patriotic strategic advisor and really looking at companies that are doing things that I think are right and hoping that a little bit of my time and attention will advance what I think is right, what I think is best. Now, I can be dead wrong, but there's a difference between being doing the very best work you can for any and all clients, even if you think their underlying leadership team is modest, or you think their product is okay, but not on a path to greatness. That's what I've been doing for the last many, many years. I've enjoyed it tremendously, worked with lots of wonderful people, but in order to reduce my workload while remaining very active professionally, I thought the best thing to do was to step back from that ecumenicalism and instead place my bets. And so you're going to see me next year doing a little more speaking, doing some strategic advisory work with some very specific members of the vendor and consulting community. I'm going to be doing some more writing with a little bit more naming names. And on a personal note, I'm going to be able to take vacations without having to be online every minute of every day because I won't need to be quite as in the loop as you have to be if you're a general consultant.
Well, it's very much excited for you that you can actually power down and you guys can take a vacation. Before we run out of time also, where can folks follow you writing? Where can folks track you down on Twitter and have that conversation? Share that with our audience, if you would.
Sure. My Twitter handle is at InfoBloomUS, all one word, obviously. My blog is InfoBloom.us. I'm happy to hear from people via email if they have a short inquiry that I can respond to, and that's just NaomiBloom@Mindspring.com. I will definitely be, whether I'm speaking or not, I will definitely be next year at the two big HR tech conferences, the U.S. one, the European one, and hopefully I'll be back with drive-through HR one of these days.
Well, that's definitely, I think, a guarantee we can put out there. We'd love having you on the show. It's always always a treat. A lot of people, you are still the reigning champ of the most downloaded show of all time over 3.5 years. So
wow.
So we've got to have you back. It's part of the deal. So, well, Naomi, thank you so much for joining us and all our listeners for lunch. Folks, we are definitely out of here. Great show. Everybody have a great day. We're out of time.